My name is Lisa Huber. I'm at Indiana University, and I'm part of a research group with a number of other colleagues there. And I want to acknowledge them and their work here. And this grant is funded by the National Science Foundation, but I don't have any other, nothing else to disclose. The name of our overarching research project is ETHOS, and that took us the first 2 months of the grant to come up with that. I'm kind of proud about that. And that's our website. So this study has had several different funding arms, but the one I'm talking about today was a three-year project. The main focus was to look at the privacy concerns of older adults with in-home monitoring. So our main PI is primarily interested in that idea. I think if you go to Europe, you see in-home monitoring at a much higher level than here in the States. I think we're a little bit new to it. And certainly Europe has really explored these privacy issues ahead of where we are. And my sense is that Americans tend to think, oh, the government will take care of us and we're going to be fine. So I think my colleague was like, you know, before we start swallowing the Kool-Aid, let's really take a little bit better look at how older adults really perceive their privacy needs when we think about monitoring. What I want to talk about today is one of the research questions. So the overarching question really had to do with privacy. My interest, and my colleagues are all in the School of Informatics, so I'm kind of the token gerontologist on the team, but my interest really was more in the relationship between the older adult and their caregiver. So how might these technologies affect that relationship? And in our early, there were a series of five studies during these 3 years. Our early focus group studies, what the older people said was, I don't want technology to replace contact with my adult child. Of course, you know, none of us want to have some, you know, robot or blinking set of sensors instead of having our daughter or our son or our granddaughter call us and say, how are you today? So that was one of our research questions, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. When we chose the suite of technologies to study in terms of how this how technologies might interact and affect people's perceptions of privacy and their relationships with their caregivers, we tried to look across the domains of functioning. So we chose technologies to address each of the various domains: personal safety, daily activities, health behaviors, and social communication. If you are in this field at all, that's kind of a standard list. Sometimes there's kind of a fifth one, but that generally encompasses most of the domains that people consider. So it's not the bacon strip, but the beacon strip. And these were things that by and large our students developed during the study, so we're kind of proud of them. And this one is a floor mat, like a runner, and when you step on it, it lights up just like a plane does to the exit doors. And this lights the way to the bathroom at night. And so we spent a lot of time with what color lights will not wake people up, because I know I'm always debating between, if I turn on a night light, it's too bright, and then I can't sleep, but then I can't find the bathroom. So we spent, you know, so this lights up with little red lights. It's pressure sensored, so if someone falls on the way to the bathroom, we can know that. It lights its way back and forth. It also counts the number of trips. So one of the things we were interested in, because a lot of falls happen at night going to the bathroom, right? And also if an older person is getting up 13 times in the night, then most of us get up, right? But if the average number of times an older person gets up is 2 or 3, nothing going on. But if a person's getting up a lot more, then it sends a message to the text giver. It sends a text to the caregiver. So you want to know if your mom was up all night, you know, something's going on, maybe it's time to give her a call. So that was one of them. The presence clock was the second iteration of a technology. In the first one, my parents and I were the pilot study. It was a plant. And when my parents were in their morning room, my plant would have a little strip that lit up, and then when I was in my study, my parents' plant would light up. Being a research subject in this, as we piloted that, I have to tell you that really influenced my decision to look at this, because it made me so much more conscious of my parents. Just having that, like, oh, my parents are up, it instigated to me in a desire to kind of get in touch. So in this case, I sensed that the technology facilitated my relationship with my parents. The feedback we got through focus groups was, the plant is fine, but unless you sit next to the plant all day, you have no idea kind of what's going on. So we redesigned it to be a clock so that there were LED lights around the edge of the clock, and it recorded the past 12 hours. So I could see, oh, my parents were up and in their morning room from like 7 to 10. They like to watch NBC, the morning show, you know, and then they kind of go on with their day, and then back again later. And this worked really well in our study. This was probably the favorite one. We did video cameras, not because anyone would do video cameras, but we wanted to push that privacy envelope. And we let older adults choose how many cameras they wanted and where they put them. And most of them put them, you know, like in a central hallway or a room they kind of hung out during the day. But again, we kind of wanted to just push the envelope there. And we had a scheduler And then the DigiSwitch, which was kind of our primary prototype that we looked at, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit more here. And we gave, just to see if the fact that we're giving them a whole lot of attention and technology support, we gave one group smartphones just to see, you know, like, is it just about the fact that we're over there talking to you guys all the time that makes you like this or not like this? So the control panel, I want to take a little closer look at this. So this was, we call it DigiSwitch, not control panel, because Microsoft calls their thing control panel. So we couldn't use that, but honestly, that's really what it is. It's the way for the older adult to control all of the technologies in one screen, so they didn't have to turn them on and off. And this, again, had to do with the privacy aspects. And what we built in was a function called MeTime. I don't know if you saw the movie Speed, where they looped video feed, and then they fed it back to the guy. Well, that's just what this did, is we looped some video feed of the, like, say, the living room, taken by the video cameras. And if an older adult would press MeTime, what their caregiver saw was that looped feed. In other words, the living room, I'm all fine. And the reason we did that was because if my mom had monitoring and she turned it off, what do you think the first thing I'd do would be? I'd call her and go, what's going on, right? And so if an older adult is just like, I want off from this, I am tired of being monitored, even if it's sensor monitoring, this is a way for them to just turn it off without alerting a caregiver that something's going on. The example we gave was, let's say, someone's planning a birthday surprise, but I think quite obviously we know that older adults, many of whom are single, may have overnight guests and just may not want to get into that whole discussion. So that would be a fairly obvious use of MeTime. So what do we do? In this particular part of the study, we had 6 weeks where we installed all this stuff in six very lovely people's homes in a nearby retirement community in Bloomington. And we call them every day just to kind of make sure everything was okay. We met once a week, fairly in-depth interviews. We collected a fair amount of quantitative data on logging the use of these things, when people did what. And then we also interviewed the caregivers. Overall, I mean, for the overall study, people who had the control panel rated their experiences higher than other groups. So the control panel did help people feel like they had some control over the technologies. Specifically, the question that I was interested in was how much contact did they have with their caregivers? So every day we asked them, did you talk to your caregiver today? Or we asked, we just talked to the caregivers once a week. How often did you talk to your loved one? And you see, I think the second week, there was kind of a spike there because we had a lot of storms that summer, so things would just go out all the time. Every time there was a storm, all the technologies would go down, and we had a very cute male grad student who would visit all the older lady homes and fix it, and they liked that. There was a lot of conversation that week, but overall, across the study, and this was what was most important to me, was the technologies didn't decrease the amount of communication between the older and their caregiver, and so that, I think, that answered. I mean, this wasn't a huge study. I can't tell you how much work it was keeping all those technologies up and running. We didn't have 100 people, but we had two people in each of the different groups. People who had the control panel didn't, and the people who had the phone. But nevertheless, I think this would lead me to want, and we're now doing a second arm of the study with lower income people. I think that communication patterns were maintained in some cases, in some of the cases improved, and these people were generally satisfied with their relationships at the beginning of the study. Now, if we interviewed a group where perhaps my son doesn't call me enough, that kind of thing, we might have different outcomes. But these were people who had fairly stable relationships with their caregivers, and they were happy at the beginning, they were happy at the end. One of the scales we did was perceived interpersonal closeness. It's kind of a typical bullet, you know, the target kind of sign, and you label where your support network is on there. And those things didn't change very much in terms of where they felt their caregivers were on there. Some of the things is we've talked more since I had the technology. A lot of the conversation, as you might guess, was about the technology. Now, whether that would continue over time is questionable. But if you have an older relative who has a smartphone, I think that is an ongoing topic of conversation because there's always a new smartphone and there's always a new feature. Something more stable and in place like the beacon strip doesn't, over time, I don't think it's going to elicit quite that much conversation. The one comment, the second to the bottom, it made me more aware of what she does all day, and that kind of thing, it made me more aware and think of her more. And that was my own experience in the early part of the study. They would use the technologies in ways we had not anticipated. And this is something I really like. I really like Laura Carstensen's socio-emotional selectivity theory, and I use that as I've published on this particular part of the study, that relationships are so important in late life, and they'll use what they can to facilitate those important relationships. So older adults would use the presence clock to know when was it a good time to call their adult child. So we thought of it more the other way. The adult caregiver could see that, oh, mom's home, but actually the older adults used it the other way. The presence clock was also the only reciprocal technology, and that's something else we were interested in. Instead of the older adult just being passively monitored, the presence clock gave them equal looks, equal windows into each other's lives, so they each one could kind of see what was going on. No, I talked about this already, that it facilitates feelings of connectedness and just awareness of daily activities. It can, certainly, and this was, again, the major question was, does it present challenges to privacy? The one funny one was when Zach, that was the cute grad student, was here, and she had, that particular older adult had chosen to put the camera by the way, she's talking about a bed in the bedroom. So it was funny in that case, but you can see, well, okay, that can be problematic. And on another time, the caregivers pretended the presence clock wasn't working. So the older adult would call, the caregiver's like, oh, I don't want to talk to mom right now. And then the mom's like, well, I see you're there. And they go, no, it's not working. They told us that. And so I think we there's privacy for caregivers as well. You know, not right now, you know. So certainly this was a pilot study by all means. I mean, we followed up with a large-scale survey with over 100 people, kind of looking at how people felt about, and this was mostly related to the privacy issues. The phones versus monitoring was interesting, and maybe that's a subtopic because I don't have much time left. But certainly, we all know in this field that, boy, the technologies have to work all the time or people just are out of it. And the storms we had that particular summer really, you know, when everything will go down, people are like, okay, I need something that would always work. In conclusion, I think, and where we've gone with it since is that, as you know, older adults highly individual, their needs are highly individual, and their needs evolve over time. And so a one-size-fits-all doesn't, in our mind, doesn't really work. I think technologies that are customizable to an older adult with their preferences and also with the type of relationship with the caregiver. Some people are maybe very close with an adult daughter, that maybe there's fewer privacy barriers. But some people may not have a caregiver with whom they feel very close, and then they need to be able to have less transparency about the kinds of information that's relayed over technology. So these were sort of the overarching things. I want to leave just a few minutes for questions if you have them.
Yes. Do you have a definition of caretaker or examples? You've mentioned children, but were there other examples of people who served as caregivers?
You know, absolutely, and I'm glad, thank you for that question, because in this very small study, each of the caregivers was a different relationship. One was a son, one was a daughter, one was a brother, and one, this woman had children, but none of them were nearby or were willing to participate. So it happened to be two men that were partners and had bought the house that she used to live in, and that was her. Those were her caregivers. And so that really gave us an opportunity to see, and that's kind of what I implied with, in that particular caregiving relationship, and they did serve as caregivers, but obviously she didn't want video of herself running around in the morning. So, it did, that's why I think we really felt, you know, that these things have to be customizable. Thank you.
So kind of as a follow-up to that, too, were these all unpaid caregivers, or, for example, the couple that you just talked about, were they paid caregivers? And I would just be curious about that dynamic, too, and the privacy issues, if it was perhaps a caregiver from an agency or, you know,
absolutely.
Caregivers right. From different sources and how that might play into it.
Yes, absolutely. In this study, we were looking at the informal caregiving relationship. So I do think that some home health care agencies are exploring some kinds of technologies to help monitor better. I mean, if the home health care worker's there once a week, you know, and she falls on Monday and the person gets there on Friday. So, but in this case, thank you.
Or again, I would just wonder, again, if you have a number of caregivers and you've got to have a presence clock for six caregivers and one person receiving the care.
Yeah.
So, you know, that would just be interesting, too, as far as the scope of your technologies and just the number of technologies.
In our the study that we submitted out four times, the last time we got really good reviews, we're just sure we're gonna talk them into it this time, but that's what we're looking at is different groups with different technologies monitoring different activities. So there's a small group that you might want to know, you know, I'm up every day, but there's a large group that you might not mind sharing your daily activity, physical activity patterns with. So, exactly, thank you.
Was the technology limited by distance in any way? In other words, did the caregivers have to live within X number of miles of the subject, or I'll let you then?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not limited by the technology because it used the internet.
Sure.
They were all went over the internet. It was limited by Zach's ability to drive to all places. So, we did the weekly interviews too. So we said the caregiver had to be within 50 miles just so that we could,
yeah.
You know, we had to be there quite a bit. So. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.